All right. Thank you for the introduction, Clint. So detection of cryo-1F resistance at falls. So cryo-1F resistance was first reported in 2006 in Puerto Rico by Storer et al. Resistance was shown to be autosomally inherited and recessive, and which translated into moderately less sensitive cryo-1AB and cryo-1AC toxins, since they're both cryotoxins that was found to be moderately less sensitive when both toxins are in the plant. No evidence that cryo-1F resistance had spread to U.S. mainland from 2006 to 2011. And so typically when our fall armyworm populations move into the United States, they originate from extreme South Texas, Mexico, South America. They move up into Louisiana. That's where we see a lot of our populations come from. And then the populations up the East Coast typically originate out of Puerto Rico, the Caribbean, extreme southern Florida. And they kind of distribute even as well into Louisiana, Alabama, and up into the East Coast as well. So these are some sample locations that were collected. The ones in Florida, the Collier and Hendry, these are the stars down here towards the bottom of Florida. That's going to be two colonies that I'm going to present data on. And then there's also populations out of Louisiana that Dr. Wong collected from Dean Lee, as well as out of Winsboro. So Rapides and Franklin parishes, and then Collier and Hendry. So this is some fall armyworm population. This is some of Dr. Wong's data from Wong et al. 2012. And so this shows the resistance ratios and the LC50s of field-collected cryo-1F resistant fall armyworms, where we can see our Dean Lee colony collected off a non-VT corn is 131 more times resistant than our susceptible population. Whereas you go down to these Florida populations down here, and they're greater than 180 times more resistant than the susceptible. So there are some resistant populations of fall armyworm infesting corn in the United States and Louisiana and Florida. So these are this is the allele frequencies of the cryo-1F resistance in fall armyworms to corn. And this is the Louisiana, this is how many resistant R alleles were found in Louisiana out of 70 total lines, with two populations having two R alleles, which is our highest one in Louisiana. And in Florida, we had one population that had four R alleles that confer resistance to cryo-1F. So the allele frequency in Florida is very high, whereas in Louisiana, it's not really common, but it's also not really rare either. So we are seeing some resistance alleles moving into Louisiana. So these are some field trials conducted by Qureshi in Collier, Florida. And so this is a number of percent infested plants from corn hybrids. This is non-BT Pioneer varieties, Monsanto and Syngenta. And this is Herculex corn. So even though it has the cryo-1F gene in it, it's not really bringing a whole lot to the table against resistant fall armyworms, because you can see that it's got very high levels of infestation. Whereas you go to double row, where you start to see some pyramided genes, you get better control, equal to 20%, and then Smart Stacks and Vip corn obviously does a very good job controlling these worms. So these are the response of fall armyworm populations to diet-incorporated cryo-1F toxins. And so as you'd expect with these resistant populations from the Hendry and Collier, Florida populations, we see very low mortality in diet-incorporated BT toxins. So whereas with LSU, we're showing that we're not seeing the amount of resistance that are seen in Florida. And so this is from Dr. Wong's research as well at LSU. So the objective was to evaluate the survival of cryo-1F resistant and susceptible fall armyworm cotton cultivars that are currently planted and those expected to be planted in the near future in the United States. So tissues that are bioassayed are leaves, squares, blooms, and bowls. But I'm only going to talk about leaves and squares today. Blooms and bowls are going to be assayed at a later date. So our fall armyworm populations, the two populations we evaluated are the two known cryo-1F resistant fall armyworm colonies, the Hendry and the Collier. We lost the Hendry population, and we had to reselect the Collier population due to contamination with other colonies, so we reselected that on Herculex corn. And then we used our standard for comparison as a known cryo-1F susceptible fall armyworm colony out of LSU. So the cotton varieties that we evaluated, we had a non-BT Fibermax 966, that was our non-BT control line, as well as TwinLink, which contains the Cry1AB and Cry2AE genes, TwinLink Plus, which is the same, which is the inclusion of VIP. Monsanto, we only looked at Bolgard 2. We weren't able to look at Bolgard 3. And then with Dow, we looked at WideStrike and WideStrike 3, which contain CRY1AC, CRY1F, and WideStrike 3 includes those genes plus VIP. So the bioassay single leaves replaced in 8-well bioassay trays with a base filled with auger for moisture. Neonates were used on leaf tissue bioassays, and first instars were used on squares. We used 20 leaves or squares per treatment, and mortality was recorded 2, 4, and 6 days after infestation. And then tissue was replaced with fresh tissue after 4 days. So moving into our non-BT, this shows that we had acceptable levels of mortality on non-BT, what is acceptable, what we've seen in published papers. So that was to show that our worms do still feed on leaf tissue. They haven't been on diet forever, so they still can feed on these leaf tissues. And the black is the LSU colony, the blue is Hendry, and green is Collier, and that's going to be the same throughout the talk. So these colors are going to coordinate with the same populations. So the non-BT squares, we saw higher mortality, about upwards of 55% mortality for both LSU and Collier populations, and there were no significant differences between the two colony, and this is on non-BT. And then you can see kind of up in the corner, this is a picture of how the, at least with the square bioassays, it was oriented where the square was placed inside auger, so it allowed the square to stay moist and not desiccate while being in the cup. So moving into WideStrike, what we see here is in the black bar, the LSU susceptible colony would do is what we expected. It was controlled by the CRY1AC and CRY1F, the WideStrike tissue. Whereas with the Hendry and the Collier populations, we saw reduced susceptibility to them being resistant, especially with the Hendry population having about 15% control coming out of WideStrike. So moving into squares, that was the tissue. This is the LSU versus the Collier. We saw upwards of 50% mortality with the Collier population, and we saw 100 with the LSU on that WideStrike square, and that took almost 8 days for where we'd see 50% mortality. So these are, like I said, it is resistant, and we are seeing it in the WideStrike squares. Bolgard is a little bit of a different story. We're still seeing some possible insensitivity to some of these toxins, where even with the Hendry and the Collier population, out past 6 days, we still only receive 70% mortality with the Collier and about 40% mortality with the Hendry populations. So moving into, that was leaf. And then we repeated the Hendry again because just to see if we could replicate what we saw in the first one, and it did show that after we repeated that colony, we did see about the same level of mortality with the Hendry population at upwards of about 70%. Looking at the squares, it was a bit of a different story, though, where that became non-significant after 6 days after exposure to where we got 100% mortality. It just took quite a bit longer with the Collier population to get there as opposed to our susceptible strain. So moving on to TwinLink, we saw no significant differences at the leaf. So, however, LSU, Hendry, and Collier both had upwards of 80% control. And then moving on to the twin on the leaf as well, we saw no significant differences with both colonies having 100% mortality at 4 days after exposure. Moving on to squares. It took a gradual change for Collier to reach where the experiment stopped, where it settled about 60% mortality, where at 2 days our susceptible colony reached 100% mortality. So it is taking longer, and the worms are surviving on twin link tissue as well. Moving into WideStrike 3, it's a little bit of a different story with the inclusion of VIP. VIP is kind of the trump card that we have into this cotton where it causes 100% mortality, where it was no significant differences at 4 days. WideStrike 3 squares, kind of the same situation, except it took longer. By the second day or by the fourth day, the Collier population had caught up with the susceptible population in mortality. TwinLink Plus, we saw no significant differences, and we did see 100% mortality with all three populations. The squares, kind of the same situation we saw with WideStrike 3, where it took longer, took to the fourth day, but at that fourth day we saw 100% mortality and no significant differences. So in summary, the LSU population was highly susceptible to all BT entries. CRY1F-resistant fall armyworms exhibited significant survivorship on leaf and square tissue. Response to Bolgar 2 indicated some tolerance or also some possible expression issues to where it was the Bolgar may not be expressed as fully in a leaf, where we saw reduced mortality in the leaf but increased mortality in the squares on Bolgar. And with Twin Link, we saw increased mortality in the leaf and reduced mortality in the squares. So it could be an expression issue or an expression situation with this cotton, but we're going to kind of delve into that a little bit more and hopefully figure out the answer to that question. We didn't observe with Bolgar 2 two-score assays, but did observe with Twin Link, and all populations were highly susceptible to Wide Strike 3 and Twin Link Plus, which is the VIP cotton. So we'd like to thank Dow, Bayer, Monsanto, and Cotton Incorporated for supporting this research, and I'd like to answer any questions.
We got a few minutes for questions.
All right, thank you.